If you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I am your host, Phil, and as always with me is my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. How are you doing tonight, Camille?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm tired. I woke up at 3:30 and couldn't go back to sleep. So I was up for a long time. And yeah, so if I'm a little loopy for this episode, I apologize, but also maybe that will make it more enjoyable. So
we'll see.
So tonight we're talking about a senatorial debate, the last one that has occurred between these four candidates before the primary on March 5th. Also in other news, we'll be at the convention on Saturday up in Orange County at the Libertarian Convention. So if you see us, make sure to stop us and say hi. We're friendly people. I'm sure, though, Camille will get more adoring fans than I do, because for some reason, Camille does get more adoring fans. I don't know what it is. Everywhere Camille goes, she gets people who come up to her and like, oh my God, it's Camille. I love your show. I love what you do. Blah, blah, blah.
Lies. You lie.
Can I tell the story from the last convention? This is a really funny story to me.
Sure. I know your version of it is very different from reality, but sure.
I'm just telling you my truth. This is my truth that I saw. We were at the last convention. We had just met up. We were about to go see Trump speak. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to run upstairs and drop my stuff off and come back down. Ran upstairs, came back down and dropped my stuff off. And then when I came down, I saw someone was talking to Camille and they were very excited. They looked at, you know, just based on their gestures. And I walked closer and they were so excited. Like, oh, my gosh, I love your show. Blah, blah, blah. I love what you do. And they were definitely fawning over Camille. Camille had a big fan. And to the listener, if you're out there and you know who you are, we love you. Thank you for supporting the show. And as I walk up, Camille's like, oh, yeah, great. Thank you so much for tuning in. Oh, here's Phil. He's the host of California Underground. He started the show. And then they turn over and look at me and they go, hi, nice to meet you. And then they go right back to Camille, keep talking to Camille. Oh, my gosh, it's amazing. I'm like, oh, okay. So Camille gets a lot of fans when she's out in public, as opposed to me. So I don't know. Maybe people, I don't know. I'm a nice guy. I don't think I put off a, what do you call it? I don't think I put off a demeanor that is unapproachable. So, but yeah, anyway, we'll be there on Saturday at the Libertarian Convention covering. We're not going to be doing a live podcast, but we'll be doing some recording, taking some shots and stuff like that, and maybe putting it together for a video, and then we'll discuss it later. All right, so tonight's episode, we're going to talk about, like I said, the senatorial debate. We don't usually cover federal issues, mostly because we like to focus on what happens here in California, because the local stuff, state assembly, state senate, governor's race, all that stuff is really what affects our daily lives as Californians. Senators, they go and they go vote on federal stuff that may not really completely impact us. But senators, we don't have a lot of senator debates. The person, you know, this seat is Dianne Feinstein's seat. Dianne Feinstein literally held this seat until she died. And that seems to be the MO for a lot of senators, is they'll just hold on to this seat until they die, like John McCain and other senators. So it's very kind of rare when you see a brand new Senate race. Alex Padilla was the last one. He was appointed by Gavin Newsom after Barbara Boxer stepped down. And once you're the incumbent, it basically guarantees that you're going to be senator for life anyway, which interestingly enough, there was a controversy when Dianne Feinstein died, and there were a bunch of candidates who were already looking, like Adam Schiff and all them. And they were all posturing to either get appointed or no appointment. So they were like, appoint me or don't appoint at all. Barbara Lee was one of those candidates who was like, if you're going to appoint someone, you should appoint me. He didn't appoint anyone. He said, we're going to have an election for a partial term and a full term. And here we are. What were your initial thoughts before we get into it about this debate?
I basically took naps in between Steve Garvey's pauses. Every time he ended a sentence and started a new one, I took a little nap. That's how well I was so into it.
I was, when I first pulled up the video that we're going to watch tonight, I saw that it was 2 hours and I was like, oh no, what have I done? It's 2 hours. This is going to be awful. But thankfully it's only an hour debate. The other hour, I don't know, I guess it's just commentary or something like that. But once it ended at an hour, I was like, phew, thank gosh. I was like, there was no way I'd be able to sit through 2 hours of it. But yeah, I think the name of this episode is very apropos, in the sense of what I think, and that's why I called it the unimpressive Senate candidates, because these are just not really impressive candidates. You watch these people and go, they're going to be seated out of 50 or 100 people in the entire country get to be senators. It's the, they call it the upper house. It's a very prestigious honor to be a senator of the United States of America. And you look at these four candidates and you just go, none of these people are impressive to me to be like, wow, yeah, they should totally be senator. They know what they're talking about. They know the policies. They know the issues. Literally none of them to me come off as people who I'd be like, yeah, that's the person who should be senator. Like sometimes you look at someone and go, they might be impressive enough to be president. They might be impressive to be senator or congressperson. But quite literally none of these people are that impressive. So
my first note, I have 2 pages of notes. My first note, is this a really bad SNL skit?
That's what it seems like. It seems like it was just a really bad SNL skit. Like, and they're like,
that's, yeah. Like I was like, does this get funny? That's what I need here.
I am trying to figure out why Instagram is not working again, but anyway, not working. So, we've been having issues recently about streaming to Instagram and stuff like that. So we've been trying it out. We'll see where it goes. And, update you in the future, but I think we'll always be on YouTube and Rumble like we are right now, just for future reference, whether we do keep doing the Instagram or not. We'll see. But anyway, let's get started. A little bit of background about the Senate race. I was looking at the polling, and for those of you who don't know, okay, the four candidates are Adam Schiff, who we all remember. Adam Schiff was part of the Russian collusion investigation that led to nowhere. He said he had evidence. He didn't.
He never misses an opportunity to bring up that he's helped lead that.
Which is, it's just funny because it literally went nowhere. He had no evidence. He lied to the American people saying he had evidence, that it was in his hands and he couldn't wait to show the American people. Never showed the evidence. And yeah, he just got away with lying to people for over a year, I guess, with this Russian collusion. So Adam, as Trump calls him, Adam Pencil Neck Schiff is running. We have Barbara Lee, who's a congresswoman. We have Katie Porter, who is also a congresswoman. She's from Orange County, I believe. That's her seat, is down in Orange County.
Yeah.
And then we have Steve.
She's just south of me.
So she's not your representative, but she's close to you.
Close to you.
Katie Porter's also the one with the whiteboard. I guess that's her shtick, is a $10 whiteboard. And then Steve Garvey, who hopped into the race, former Dodger running as a Republican. So that's the lay of the land. Those are the four candidates we're going to watch tonight.
Early is technically still in the race. He just hasn't been, for whatever reason, he's not been invited to the debates. I don't know what the reason is.
I don't think he's polling well enough. Looking at the polling, he's like, yeah, he's not doing so well. He's like 3 or 1% in most of the polls.
I'm surprised he's not, because Steve Garvey is almost as brain dead as Biden. So I'm surprised that Garvey is polling better than Early.
Well, I think there's a reason for that. And that's what I want to bring up first before we get into the debate. The two top poll getters right now in the two position based on polls, and this is kind of real clear politics, is Adam Schiff and Steve Garvey. Now, you may think like, wow, a Republican is actually going to make it to the general election. And this is actually pretty common recently for Democrats to elevate Republican candidates, especially for races like this for the Senate, because it's a strategic move to to get the Republican on the ballot, knowing that in California, the Democrat's always going to win, especially on this big statewide race for Senate. So if you can guarantee that Steve Garvey will get on and you'll be the Democrat, you've basically won the election.
Right.
So that's what Adam Schiff.
Lots of races right now, like in near you, District 75. That's happening with the unions really bringing, like, they're trying to make sure that Carl DeMaio, they believe their candidate can beat Carl DeMaio. So they're trying to, like, they've got the ads. They want Andrew Hayes, and they're actually bringing down Carl DeMaio because Carl DeMaio has the name recognition. And obviously he's been very active down there. So the unions have put in a ton of money trying to smear Carl DeMaio right now, to trying to bring up Andrew Hayes, hoping that then, I don't even know the name of the Democrat candidate, but then no, if we can get Andrew Hayes, the Democrat candidate, to the general, then the Democrat hopefully beats Andrew Hayes.
Yeah. In a jungle primary system as it is right now, it's this is what happens. This is sort of the games they play. PACs will support a candidate. So if you are someone, I've seen this commercial about 1 bajillion times. Steve Garvey is too conservative for California. He voted for Trump and blah, 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 and he wants to support a wall. And like, I've seen that commercial more than I've actually seen positive commercials.
What year are you living in that you see commercials?
Well, I mean, ads, like you're streaming something and okay. I feel like, okay. Yeah. I mean, they're still commercials. They're even though they're ads, they're still, I call them commercials. So if you're streaming something on Hulu, it's a commercial.
Okay.
You know, it's not like I'm tuning in on my rabbit ears and watching commercials on the local news.
Honestly, you would not surprise me at all if you did.
I do have rabbit ears.
About like being such an old soul that I wouldn't be surprised if you're like.
This has nothing to do with politics. Helpful tip for anybody who lives in sort of a major city area. If you want to save some money on streaming, just buy yourself a $25 set of rabbit ear antennas off Amazon. You get a ton of channels just being in a city. So that's how we get all our local stuff. NBC, ABC, all those networks and stuff like that.
Got it.
And then you can see commercials, right? That's the point of the story, is you'll see commercials about Steve Garvey. But you did send me this screenshot, and I want to show this. Hold on 1 second. Let's see. I had to switch this out because I was ready to share something else. So this is a screenshot that you sent me. I don't know if you can really see it. Let's see if we can zoom in a little bit. So you had pulled, like, these are ads that are running on Facebook right now, and you can see.
I mean, not you'll see the dates that they're.
Yeah, so they started running, you know, last week. These are ads that are promoting Steve Garvey, and Adam Schiff is clearly doing the same thing. They're the ones who put on this advertisement or ad that you see on streaming services. The strategy here, again, is if Adam Schiff can get into the general with Steve Garvey, hello, Senator Adam Schiff. That's the whole name of the game right now. Katie Porter tried to call out Adam Schiff for this tactic, but she's doing the same exact thing with Eric Early. So she's trying to boost Eric Early. So it's her and Eric Early on the ballot. You know, this is just the games they play in
the
jungle.
It's so weird.
It is so weird. You know, they don't have this.
Which we may or may not get to that part, but she brought him up to in the debate. And I'm like, really? Really? Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Are we ready to hop into this debate? Because, again, this was painful. Like, at least I've watched.
So, so bad. I'd honestly, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'd rather watch Gavin Newsom.
You'd rather, wow, okay, write this down. February 22nd, 2024, Camille says she'd rather watch an interview of Gavin. This was bad. This was really bad. And you'll see why. So again, we're here to provide as much insight and maybe comic relief as possible. So, and we're going to bounce around. We're not going to cover the whole thing because not everything has to do with California. There's stuff like the war in Ukraine that they talk about, and you know, we're just not really interested in talking about that. That's not really the point of this podcast. So all right, let's get started. The Senate debate, the final one before the primary. Decision 2024.
Rebuttals at the discretion of the moderators and 15 seconds for follow-ups. Conan.
So let's start with inflation.
Okay. First off, I will say the moderators were very, very strict on time in this debate. So they cut off a lot of the candidates. They were not screwing around on time. They were like, nope, you're done.
Yeah, which I appreciate. But I also kind of love when everyone starts screaming at each other, which didn't really happen. And that could have maybe made this more interesting.
Yeah, it could have been a little bit more exciting. But they also felt like they didn't really have a lot of time to talk. It felt like they could only really get into like their bullet points or like their stump speech. Mm-hmm. Which
well,
maybe,
for sure.
maybe
Garvey didn't.
Maybe that's why it made this so boring of a debate, is because they didn't really get into anything of substance. But all right, let's get started.
Inflation. It was supposed to tick down last month, but it went up. We noticed in the last debate, you spent, at least the Democrats here, spent a lot of time talking about the minimum wage. You wanted to double the federal minimum wage. You wanted to increase the minimum wage here in California. There was Congresswoman Lee talked about a $50 an hour minimum wage. The minimum wage is going up in California in April for fast food workers of major chains to $20 an hour. Already, McDonald's, Jack in the Box, Chipotle say they're going to raise the cost on the menu to pay for all that. I believe Pizza Hut said they're laying off 1,200 drivers. I want you to address to voters who think, well, listen, this just makes the cost of living worse. Speak to that and to the problem of inflation and how so many people watching tonight believe their money is worth less tomorrow than it is today because of the inflation rate. Can a senator do anything about it? Congressman Schiff, we'll have you start.
There's a lot that a California senator can do about this. And you're right. People are working harder than ever. The problem today is not that people aren't working. The problem is they are working and they just can't make enough to get by. And the answer is not paying people less to try to keep inflation down. The answer is bringing down the cost of goods, bringing down the cost of housing, bringing down the cost of childcare. We want to strengthen our economy. We need a way to make sure that people can have good access to quality childcare, and particularly women can participate in the workforce. That will raise the economy. But more than that, we need to bring down energy costs. We can do this with a windfall profits tax on oil companies. We can bring down the cost of housing by building a lot more housing.
Well, first off, the cost of energy in California has a lot to do with the sweetheart deals that are given out to a lot of these public utilities when you have a semi sort of monopoly that's granted by the government. So like SDG&E, the rates have gone up. PG&E, all the rates have gone up. Everyone's electricity has gone up because there's literally no competition. Like, who are you going
right.
to, who are they worried about competing with? Like, if SDG&E raises your rates 30%, you can't go to a competing electricity company. They're just going to say, you got to pay it. And this whole windfall tax thing, we talked about it on one episode a while back about this whole idea of like windfall tax, but it never actually, there's been no studies to show that it actually does anything. There's been no evidence. They tried to do it in the 70s on gas companies. It didn't do anything. So again, he's pointing the blame at the wrong people in terms of how do you get energy costs down and building more housing. He makes it sound like it's so easy. We just got to build more housing.
We build them.
Just why don't we build them? I don't know. Why don't we talk about the zoning laws and the fact that houses are too complicated and that they have to be built by union contractors and the regulations to build the housing and what kind of materials you have to use and they have to have solar panels and blah, blah, blah.
I
think
you admit that they're also the PACs behind his campaign. No, but I mean, in all fairness, he didn't have time to get into all the things, but all the things are important. But right off the bat, I noted this. I understand that there's plenty of women out there who want to work and who have to work, but they all are going to talk about it, or I think the majority of them are going to talk about it. They keep talking about bringing the cost of childcare down. Why have we steered so far away from, like, we're not even talking about trying to get back to single income families anymore. Like, we're just like, oh, we got to make childcare affordable so that these women can be in the workplace. I am not shaming anyone who has to work or who chooses to work. I'm just saying we have gotten so far away from like, hey, why aren't we making it affordable for moms to, you know, maybe stay home and raise their kids if they want to? We're I guess that's just like literally not even a topic anymore.
I think that the reason, and this is partly a theory I've heard, one reason they want to keep pushing that you have to put your kids in daycare and women should just go back in the workforce is that increases the amount of employees who they can make taxes off of.
Well, right. And then, so, I'm sorry, because this is really off topic, but then we know that public schools are like teaching a more left-wing agenda of, you know, like the government is good and the government is here for you. And I mean, it's a whole thing, like start them in pre-K, get them through.
Might have lost her there for a second. Yeah, I think her point was that when you get people, and this is something that like Murray Rothbard talked about in his Anatomy of the State, which is you get people into these public schools and public education, and public education has a vested interest to keep people in their schools and then keep telling people that what they're doing is good for them and that they should support what they're doing in the government and all that stuff. So there is a vested interest for them to continually push your children into childcare, publicly funded childcare, basically from like cradle till 18 until you're a voter. They want to have your children and influence them through the public education system. And they don't like the idea of like homeschooling or school choice because, again, competition is something that they don't like anyway. So I think Camille had to drop off real quick. She'll be back. So we'll just keep watching. And when she comes back, we'll let her finish her comment.
Conan, my family came to California when I was 11 and searched for a better life. And we found it here. My wife, Eve, and yes, we're Adam and Eve. Her family also came here in search of a better life, and she found it here. I want that to be true for future generations of Californians. And the way we can make that possible is by bringing down the cost of goods, and particularly housing.
Thank you. Congresswoman Porter, inflation.
Good evening, California. We need to make sure that Washington is focusing on our biggest challenge, which is the cost of living. Decade after decade, career politicians haven't focused on our challenges, including the cost of housing, the cost of childcare, the cost of elder care, the cost of college. Yes, we need to make sure that workers get paid a wage that reflects what they contribute at their companies and at their jobs. But we also need Washington to get in the game. Decade after decade, they haven't been there. You can't raise a wage an hour or two and close the tremendous gap that people face in trying to afford childcare or college. My colleague, Representative Schiff, says, for example, that he wants to bring down the cost of childcare, but he isn't on either of the two major.
Again, these are points that Democrats like this and politicians like this who have a vested interest in expanding the size of government, they will make this point that the government needs to get involved. That's clearly the issue here, is that the cost of living is too high. So we need the government to get involved. They need to tax those evil, greedy oil companies. They need to pay for your childcare. They need to pay for this. We need to pay for this program. This, you know, these are their solutions to the cost of the affordability and the cost that's going on here in states like California. That is absolutely the opposite of what should be happening here. Government should be getting out of the way when it comes to a lot of these regulations and taxes and what makes these things unaffordable. But again, that has nothing to do with that really has nothing to do. They don't want you to think about all the mistakes that they've made. They don't want to admit that they made all these mistakes and that they've made it unaffordable. And Camille's back. Hey, Camille.
Sorry. Hopefully, no, I stay here.
Yeah, we just moved on.
That's fine.
You were talking about, I want you to finish your point. You were talking about childcare and like getting kids from like public education from crib to like 18 years old.
Well, if they can do that, then, you know, they push obviously going on to higher education, and higher education is a lot of money and it requires taking out federal backed loans. Like who's behind the loans? And then all of a sudden we have to get good jobs to pay back these loans for our education to the government.
Yeah, I was just talking about how Katie Porter, again, her and Adam Schiff both kind of made the same point, which is, oh, government needs to get involved. Washington needs to get involved. California, the last thing we need is more government involvement. I think California has been a prime example of what happens when Democrats have run the state in a one-party rule and added all these regulations and taxes and everything on top of it, increased the size of government and how they've made it unaffordable. But politicians like Katie Porter are just like, oh, no, no, we need to continue adding more programs and funding more stuff. And right. We need to do X, Y, and Z. We need to get involved, and Washington needs to get in the game.
Then they're like, we need to increase wages for childcare workers. Again, can we incentivize help one parent stay home? Help, I mean, affordability. I'm not asking for money. I don't want them to give me money. Just make things more affordable. Stop implementing all these programs that just raise more and more and more taxes on us. Stop, you know, people with good credit need to now pay whatever amount for loans for everyone else on their mortgages. Like, if you have good credit and you go and you get a mortgage, well, now you're partially responsible for somebody else. Like, stop doing this to us. We can't afford it anymore. I don't care how much money we make. We can't afford it anymore.
I just want to stop looking at my paycheck and get sad when I see the difference between the gross pay and then the net pay. That's what I want to see. Because that makes me sad every time I look at my paycheck. Yeah. I'm like, so much money is gone that the government takes from me.
Major yeah. Democratic bills that would do that. He's not on a bill to provide rental assistance to people for housing, although all of these things are in his plans. That's the gap between Congressman and candidate Schiff.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey.
Well, these career politicians, 3 years ago, they were on the watch that has created what it is today. When the president took office, he signed 90 different.
Whenever he speaks in this debate, I think of that Adam Sandler movie. I think it's Billy Madison, or I think it's Billy Madison, where he's like, today, Junior. Because he just he can't get his point out. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Hello, so I could just be like, let me know when we're.
They should have just played like little lullaby music under Steve Garvey. Because he's just so. Talk about low energy for a guy who used to be a Major League Baseball player.
Bills. And what he did was he turned off gas and oil. And when that happens, energy goes through the roof. It affects all elements of our life. But what really happened is the overspending in Washington, which caused inflation. And it goes from the table in the morning, where mom's trying to figure out the week, whether she can feed her children as she wants to the gas station, where we've seen gas go up $2-3. And by the way, when I go to the gas station at 7:30 in the morning, hardworking Californians are going there. They're not buying 10 gallons. They're buying $10 worth of gas. And then it goes to schools and affordability. But this was all on their watch.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. Congresswoman Lee, you're sticking by the $50.
I mean, he's not wrong, even though it took him a while to get through it. He actually made decent points. If you were awake for the entire thing, he made good points, which is these career politicians who've been at the wheel for 30 years or so, they've created this problem, and now they're trying to pretend like they're going to change it. He ain't wrong. He ain't
it's
wrong.
True.
That's all I got to say.
It's true. Can you imagine him, though, as like your econ teacher in high school? You wouldn't learn anything.
Oh, my gosh. I would be just sitting on my laptop, like, I don't know, watching YouTube videos quietly or something, just not paying attention to them.
You had a laptop in high school?
No, not in high school. I'm thinking of like college. No, in high school. Oh my gosh, I would absolutely be asleep. It's
not like your, you know, 1940s radio, but now, like, how much older than you am I? Jeez.
No, laptops were non-existent when I was in high school. We did have laptops. They were just extremely expensive, and they weighed about 100 pounds. Okay. So not anything like today.
For now, our minimum wage?
Let's be honest. First of all, we have to talk about what it takes for people to live in California. We have a huge affordability crisis. The cost of living is much too high. First, at the federal level, of course, we have to raise the minimum wage. We haven't raised it in a decade. $7.25 to $17 in 2025. Okay, great first step. But in California, for example, we have $16 an hour now. And believe you me, every single study that you have seen that has been written about the affordability crisis in California, people are working 2 and 3 jobs just to pay rent, just to afford childcare. We have to think about and talk about a living wage. What does it mean to have a living wage in California? Over $100,000 in many parts of California, people are just barely surviving. They're living on the edge. So we have to think about what it takes to make sure that people can afford to live in California.
Thank you, Congressman. That means
they live. So maybe the federal wage hasn't gone up, but California, it feels like every couple of years they keep increasing the minimum wage. Like they literally just increased the minimum wage for fast food workers.
Right.
And that is, I'm pulling up this article from Reason Magazine. And we all know that about what happened with Pizza Hut. And the article goes on to say, Pizza Hut announced it would lay off about 1,200 delivery drivers in Los Angeles, Orange, and Riverside counties. The layoffs were planned to take effect just weeks before the new higher minimum wage hits in California, hiking wages to $20 an hour. Remaining workers might get higher pay, assuming their hours remain the same, a big if. But fewer people will be employed. Minimum wage for California fast food workers is set to rise to $20 an hour in April, a 25% increase from the state's broader $16 minimum wage, says the Wall Street Journal. Restaurants, including McDonald's, Chipotle, Jack in the Box, and others, say they will raise menu prices in California in response, with some McDonald's franchisees estimating hundreds of thousands of dollars per restaurant in added labor costs. And this is another good point. The number of people in poverty would be reduced by 0.9 million, so I guess 900,000. That's a weird way to say that. The study predicted, but unemployment would be reduced by 1.4 million workers. So you've raised the minimum wage, congratulations, but you've now put millions of people out onto the unemployment line, and now they make no wages. So to those 1,200 delivery drivers for Pizza Hut, they didn't get a raise because of the minimum wage. They got a pink slip, and now they have no money. So well done on that front, California.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of a dumb argument to say, well, California is really expensive, so therefore we should raise the minimum wage. But it's almost like none of them have taken Econ 101, which is, if you raise the minimum wage, they're going to have to pay these people more. That's going to be passed off into your product. So now you've just raised the cost of everything once more. And it's just a race to, well, now we have to raise the minimum wage again because it's not keeping up with how unaffordable it is. Okay. But now people are charging more because the menu prices go up. So it is
and
a
then
really
they're going to all argue it, which one of them is better to tackle inflation while they're all arguing that we need to raise minimum wage.
Yeah. And then comes the debate about whether they should do helicopter money, where they just parachute money in, like an assistance or government assistance, like they did with COVID. Like, oh, should we give you a stimulus check or something of money that we don't have? So.
A living wage.
Thank you, Congressman. Mr. Schiff, you were mentioned by Congresswoman Porter. You have 15 seconds to respond to that.
Conan, there's nothing easier than putting your name on a bill. Where you see the real legislators is they write their own legislation. I've introduced numerous bills to bring down the cost of childcare, to make sure that we build childcare into new federal facilities, that we raise the wages for childcare workers. We have a real scarcity, not of people willing to do childcare work, but of people willing to do it for poverty wages. So my legislation would raise incomes for those incredibly essential workers. I don't think any family should be spending more than 5 or 10% of their income on childcare, so I would provide a tax credit as well.
Okay. So a follow-up to this, a tremendous amount of federal money has been spent over the past two administrations. Recently, the head of the Congressional Budget Office on Capitol Hill said that the deficit is getting to, will be, what, $2.6 trillion in 10 years. He called it an existential threat to the economy because the service on the debt will be so great, it'll crowd out federal spending, including a lot of the programs you'll be talking about tonight. I'm just curious, do you consider the deficit a problem, or will it work its way out, work itself out? Or if the federal budget needs to be cut, where would you cut? You don't have much time on this, 30 seconds. Congresswoman Porter, I'll have you start.
I think that we need to be fierce advocates for our tax dollars. We are all sending our money to Washington, and we should expect a return on that money. So I am proud to be one a person who will do the oversight, who will push, and who will ask, are we getting a return? Is this bill going to invest in America's future, or is it just pork barrel spending to satisfy career politicians, corporate donors? So I'm going to champion investing in things like education and infrastructure.
Just a comment on Katie Porter.
Okay.
She has a lot of money behind her campaign. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of money from her congressional campaign.
Yes.
Did she not think to hire a public speaking coach?
I really wish, I say this to people who tell me that they are considering running for office. And I always am like, you need to take a public speaking course and you need to take a debate course. You need to like be really well at both of those things.
Because she has literally no inflection in her voice. They ask her a question and it's like just one long robotic answer where she's like, and the career politicians and the pork barrel spending and this and that. And then we have to get taxes and we have to be vigilant about it. It's like, okay, are you shouting at me or like, what are you doing here? But that was just a comment. And maybe it's because she doesn't have her little whiteboard. Maybe because she feels like lost that. Imagine if she brought her whiteboard to the debate and she was like, instead of answering, she just like wrote answers like it was Jeopardy or something. And she's like, she just showed her answers.
I could have made it more entertaining too.
That would have been if she drew like pictures of like Adam Schiff and stuff. And she's like, you know. And she drew him with a little pencil neck.
Pictionary. She's just hanging out.
Drawing pictures. Yeah. And then she draws Steve Garvey and she just puts like little Z's over his head because he's sleeping or something.
I told Phil before.
What's that?
Told you, you know, before we hopped on here, I was trying to be funny and I ordered a whiteboard off Amazon Prime to just start making notes. Just as a mockery of her, and Amazon Prime failed me and it's not here.
Damn you, Amazon.
There goes my comedy.
They're never there when you need them. When you need something right away from Amazon, it never comes like, through onto them.
You're like, I want to read this book in a month, and they're like knocking on your door the second you get mine on Kindle now, you know. But then you're like, I need this, you know, tomorrow, so I'm gonna make sure I order the between 4 a.m. and 7 a.m. delivery.
Never shows.
I'm not kidding. I hear a truck.
That's probably your whiteboard.
Where it returns money to the United States.
The deficit's not an issue for you?
The deficit is an issue. Okay. And where we should cut it is wasteful military spending with the Pentagon, which has never passed an audit.
Thank you. Congressman Schiff, could you take that issue, the deficit?
Yeah, the deficit is a real problem. And I think a big part of the reason why it's a problem is that the wealthy and corporations are not paying their fair share. There are fewer than 800 families that combine.
And this is what I'm talking about. Like, these people are not impressive. Like, we have heard this idiotic, lazy talking point from Democrats for, I don't know, since Barack Obama and probably before that. Like, it's just such a lazy argument. It doesn't do any, it doesn't move. To me, it doesn't make any difference. Like, oh, well, we need to make sure the corporations pay their fair share and the wealthy are getting away with not paying. And it's just, it doesn't address anything. Like, you could tax all the billionaires in America 100%. And I think it would like barely fund the government for like 10 days. Like, we don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem, and Democrats just don't want to admit that we need to cut and start looking at maybe Katie Porter. Maybe that's what she's trying to say, but it's amazing how these Democrats just will not admit to there is a spending problem in Washington and they need to fix it and they need to cut, but they'll never say that. So they just trot out the same old unimpressive, boring lines of like, we need to tax the wealthy and the corporations.
Own the wealth of more than half of the families in America. That's just wrong. We have to repeal the Trump tax cuts. I think we could restore balance to our budget if people were paying their fair share, if some of those high-priced ball players were paying as much effectively as the fans in the stands, the working fans. And I don't know if Mr. Garvey is with me on that. I think he's not with me on that, but I think that would help address some of the budget deficit we have.
Okay, Congresswoman Lee.
Yeah, the budget deficit is a problem. And let me tell you, when these Trump-era tax cuts expire, the billionaires must be part of paying their fair share. So we need to go back to the tax code and make sure that billionaires do pay their fair share. But it was said earlier that the Pentagon...
It's sort of like the definition of a living wage. It's not really based in reality. It's based in whatever they want. So...
like the same as like we need to ban assault weapons,
right? Yeah, it's assault weapons, living wage, fair share. Like none of this stuff has any concrete definitions. It's just whatever that it sounds good, and you know you can make it whatever you want. So
not been audited. Well, it's myself who led with a Republican to insist that the Pentagon be audited, and we learned that the Pentagon very recently has flunked its sixth audit. So it's about time that Democrats follow myself and Will in the Senate to audit the Pentagon and to claw back that money.
Thank you very
and
much.
And waste, fraud, and abuse.
Mr. Garvey, is there anything in the federal budget you'd cut?
Let me just go back. Of course, the debt is serious. Over the last 4 years, we've seen the debt go sky high. Why? Because it's excessive spending by government. Mm. And my fellows up here, they understand that. It's been on their watch. 60 years of combined congressional work has caused the spiraling debt to go higher and higher. So let's get back to cutting interest rates. The Fed, just the last week, even though they...
Thank you.
Again, he's sleepy, but he ain't wrong.
It's true.
It's true. He ain't wrong.
But no one's listening to that except us.
Yeah, we're the only ones who are listening. He kind of made a weird left turn at we need to cut interest rates. That has really nothing to do with why we have a deficit. I'm going to skip ahead to this one part, and it's right here.
Who take advantage of undocumented labor to pad their bottom line, and it should stop.
Ms. Porter, thank you for your response. Ms. Lee, you've been in Congress for 26 years now. Do you bear any responsibility for this?
Let me first say that our Latino community should not trust us. They should grade us based on the work that we have done.
Thank you. As a journalist who has covered the Latino community for many years now, there's a lot of people I've talked to on the street who believe, they really believe, from the bottom of their hearts, that they're being used by your party, the Democratic Party, every time there's an election. You've promised an immigration reform time after time, over and over again. But even when you had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, you failed to pass an immigration reform. Why should voters, Latino voters, trust you now on this issue? I'll start with you, Congressmember Porter.
Look, I'm someone who went to Washington to do things differently. I'm not satisfied with what Democrats or Republicans have been delivering. I'm of a generation who has only ever known the amazing contributions that immigrants make. The House of Representatives passed the Dream and Promise Act to help give status to deliver not just a pathway to citizenship, but we need to give citizenship now to our dreamers to provide protections for TPS.
So amnesty. They want to give amnesty. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, just admit you want to give amnesty. That's fine. It's not fine. I'm just saying, like, if that's your point, just say, I want to give amnesty.
The Senate, where it died. That's why I'm running to shake up the Senate. I'm not going to offer you the status quo, because the status quo has been unacceptable and not enough for millions of Americans. I'm tired of hearing about comprehensive immigration reform. I want to do it. I'm tired of talking about pathways to citizenship. I want to give people those opportunities. The chaos, the struggles we're seeing in our immigration system benefit big corporations who take advantage of undocumented labor to pad their bottom line, and it should stop.
Ms. Porter, thank you for your response. Ms. Lee, You've been in Congress for 26 years now. Do you bear any responsibility for this?
Let me first say that our Latino community should not trust us. They should grade us based on the work that we have done, our voting record, and exactly what we believe in, and just in terms of immigrants. One,
something about like the way they answer this question, I half expected one of them to be like, I love our Latino community. I love tacos. I eat them every week here in California. It's my favorite food. But it's the way the moderator presented this question, I think it's kind of like disingenuous, because they continually do this in the media where they lump like Latino voters and the illegal immigration issue together.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just not true at all. Like, yeah, I've made it very clear. My wife grew up in Mexico. Like, I don't think she sits there and goes, well, we consider Latinos and illegal immigration the same issue. Like, she's a legal citizen, was born here in America. But I think that's kind of insulting for the media to just kind of lump those two things together. And like, it kind of thinks that like the Latino vote is like this monolith of like, they all care about illegal immigration, when the views they have on illegal immigration might be way different than what they think it is. So that bugs me that's how she asked the question, especially from someone from Telemundo, like asking that question that way, to be like, well, you know, as Latino voters, what do you think about illegal immigration? What we should be doing about it? Like, I bet if you ask a lot of Latinos, they're like, I don't know, we should stop illegal immigration. We should not let everybody come into our country.
Right. I mean, we know.
Go ahead.
Obviously, well, like some of the journalists that we personally know who are, you know, have been covering a lot of that, they are Latinos. And they're still like, hey, this needs to get under control.
Yeah, it's not a monolith. And I think if you, it's super insulting to kind of just consider the Latino vote all as one, as if they all came over here illegally and like they all share the same common experience. So, and they're
but
all
getting off topic.
Yeah.
To your same point, aren't we treat Black people as far as in the media and when it comes to politics, we treat Black people as though they all descended from slaves.
Yeah, I think that's politics do that. Politics creates these monoliths based on races and all that. When in reality, like it's not that black and white where you can just say, oh, well, you're Latino, so you have to vote this way, or, you know, how could you be Latino and support Trump or something like that? When in reality, it's like, well, maybe that voter doesn't just vote based on their ethnicity or their race. Maybe they vote because they're like, hey, I want lower taxes and I want to shrink the size of the government and I don't want to expand the size of the government. Like, they vote on different issues that at the end of the day affect their lives more than just their race or their ethnicity. So a lot of politicians do that. But I did have an article, and I can't find it right now, just kind of talking about how like there are more Latinos shifting over to Republicans. Like, we've seen it in Texas, there's been districts that have been flipped from Democrat to Republican because of Latino turnout has been changing. So I think it's a fair question. I like that she asked this question this way and said, like, why should they trust you now, as opposed, like, you haven't done anything, so why should they keep trusting you? You only show up every 4 years, 4 or 6 years for their vote, and then you just kind of leave them behind. And I would say the same for Black voters. Say, you know, Stephen A. Smith had a big rant about this not too long ago that caused a lot of stir. Stephen A. Smith, the sports commentator. And he said sort of the same thing, like, you know, politicians show up every 4 years, they ask for our vote, and then nothing ever gets done. So why are we continuing to just blindly follow one party or the other? So, I don't know. Any other thoughts on that?
No, not for now.
Okay.
I was born in El Paso, Texas, in an immigrant community in a border town. Secondly, I understand the importance of comprehensive immigration reform because border security will not work without comprehensive immigration reform. Thirdly, it is a shame and disgrace that we cannot allow our DACA students, our dreamers, to become United States citizens. And in the Senate, that would be the first thing I would do in terms of making sure that I fight with Senator Padilla to ensure the pathway to citizenship for our dreamers, as well as our farm workers.
I don't have enough time to do this, but it would be interesting for someone out there that to take clips like this where they say, this is the first thing I would do. And then if they get elected, literally look at what's the first thing they do and see if they actually lived up to it. And I bet the batting average is like zero. Like none of them actually.
Gavin Newsom would be a good one to do that on.
Yeah, that would be a good one because you're like, the first thing I'm going to do as governor. And then like, you can go see what's the first thing he did as governor. Definitely not whatever he promised.
Because we haven't protected our farm workers the way we should. The Farm Worker Modernization Act should have been passed by the Senate by now. It hasn't been. And so it's very important that Latino voters understand that there are some who may not believe that immigrants deserve the dignity and the humane treatment, but our record speaks for itself and should grade us on our record.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Your time's up. Thank you. Mr. Schiff, you've been in Congress for 24 years almost now this year. What is your take on this?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that when Democrats controlled the House and the Senate, as we did in the first 2 years of the Biden administration, as we did for a period during the Obama administration, the Democratic Party didn't get this done. And that's on our party. Now, we're never going to get the help from the Republicans. Mr. Garvey's party believes that this is a political gift that we'll never stop giving. They're not going to help us with this. We're going to have to do it ourselves, which means we're going to have to get rid of the filibuster and pass a truly comprehensive immigration reform. I'm going to go to the Senate to work with Alex Padilla and fight to make sure that happens. It's unconscionable that we haven't done it. I remember speaking to a farm worker who lives in Mexico, comes across the border every day, gets up at 1 a.m, works in our fields for 8 hours in the 100-degree heat, then goes back to the port of entry for a few hours with his family, one of the most hardworking people I've ever met. He is deserving of a pathway to citizenship because of my record of advocacy and leadership. The Chirla Action Fund, one of the premier.
Now, this is just something I was told by someone I know. There used to be a program in California where people who were from Mexico or different countries could come and be seasonal workers in California. And as long as they worked, they showed up, I think it was like 5 years in a row. They didn't get in trouble. They didn't commit crimes or anything like that. They showed up, did their work for, then they can go back to their home country. I think it was after the fifth year, you'd get a green card.
Okay.
That was actually a policy here in America or here in California. They got rid of that. So that did exist for a while. I don't know why they would get rid of it, but I don't think it's a horrible program to say if you show up and you do this for 5 years in a row and you do your work and, you know, don't get any trouble or anything like that, that you shouldn't get a green card. But he's making it sound like this is a new idea by him when this was in his state not too long ago.
Premier Immigrant Rights Groups has endorsed me. United Farm Workers have endorsed me. I will be a champion in the Senate for truly comprehensive reform.
Thank you. Your time's up. Mr. Garvey, the recent bipartisan immigration bill, a historic one, was killed by Republicans 2 weeks ago, apparently because Donald Trump wants to keep the issue alive so he can use it in his presidential campaign. How can Latinos trust Republicans on this issue as well? And you have 60 seconds.
Well, first of all, it's an honor to be with the Latino community tonight. We've had 50 years of a...
Who is he talking to?
He doesn't know where he is.
Who? He's looking out to the audience. Like,
question he's answering. Like,
it's an honor to be here with the Latino community tonight.
And also,
looking at
so slow, he doesn't have the time frame to throw in these niceties. Like, Garvey, answer the question.
You got 60 seconds. They're quick on the buzzer here, so you don't have time to. As slow as you answer questions, you should be getting right to the point.
Over now.
Yeah, he's lost 20 seconds just by saying it's great to be here with the Latino community tonight.
Have a wonderful relationship. And that's why, as your next elected U.S. Senator from California, I pledge that you will be my priority. You are the hardworking Californians who get up every day, have come here the right way to California, because this was your dream. And you're experiencing that dream, but you're not experiencing that dream through inflation, through other challenges, but you deserve to be protected. And that's why that 544-page bill could have been done by one swipe of the pen by the president. And all they needed was one page to say, secure the border, and let's stop illegal immigrants from coming to this country and infiltrating our communities and taking away from those people who are the heart and soul of California.
And talking about that bill, this is a follow-up question to all of you. That bipartisan border security bill was called the most conservative immigration bill in 40 years in our country. It would have raised the standards for asylum.
Okay, I'm going to skip ahead because then they start talking about Ukraine. So let's go to what's the next.
I'm going to speak with a pen very slowly from now on.
I mean, his points aren't wrong. That's the thing. His points aren't wrong. They're just presented really poorly.
We're just all napping while he makes them.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
I'm wondering what actions you will commit to meaningfully address the issue.
That was a question.
All right, Mr. Garvin, you have 30 seconds to respond to that.
I think climate change is real.
You want to see the question?
Well, the question was, he presented it as a young, whatever, as a young man growing up, one of my biggest concerns is climate change. And I just thought, this is so sad that you were raised to believe that the biggest concern, the biggest issue facing you is climate change. And I know people who believe that. And I just, that's just sad to me. Like, I mean, you know, I homeschool, I just can't imagine ever being like to my children, like, okay, but reminder, the biggest issue, here, my pen, the biggest issue we have. So anyway, sorry, just putting the pen down, carry on with the video.
You have 30 seconds to respond to that.
I think climate change is real. I think it's both man-made and both natural. I believe that 3 years ago, there was a rush to judgment by the administration. I believe that gas and oil lines were turned off, which caused a tremendous strain on our economy. I think if it would have been more thought out, this would have had less stress. But I think the most important thing for us to do is always be aware that in this country, we do have problems in
Mr. Garvey.
What I'm saying, I'll just quickly to just wrap this up.
Time's up.
Yeah, he gotta speed it up here, Steve-O. You know, you gotta move it along here. That he took way too long on that answer. So and she just cut him off. She was like, yep, you're done. Sorry.
Okay,
time's up.
Thank you.
Ms. Porter, your response.
I am proud to be the candidate in this race who has spent time working in Congress on climate issues. I serve on the House Natural Resources Committee, and I've had bills passed into law to hold big polluters to account. Look, I'm different than Representative Schiff. He's taken corporate PAC checks from BP.
I'm not a career politician.
These are household names. They are polluters. So people can count on me to
How long has Katie Porter been in Congress? It's been a while, right? Like, it's a couple terms at least. Like,
well, a couple, but not 24 or 26 years.
So there's like Garvey has to speed up the bat speed. Yeah, that's a good inside baseball joke. She hasn't been there as long as Adam Schiff, but you know, at a certain point, you can't use the career politician line unless you're like an outsider or like a brand new politician. If you've been reelected a couple times, like you don't get to use the career politician line over and over again.
I feel like you need to look this up because, I mean, we remember her race, but was she already in Congress? Okay, you can carry on and I'll find the answer.
To do Washington differently and deliver the climate change that we have been waiting for so long.
Congressman Schiff, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Well, first of all, my record in the environment goes back to my days as a prosecutor. When here in Los Angeles, I formed the...
I'm going to skip ahead a little bit.
Okay, so she, 2020, so two terms.
Oh, so she already had two terms. It's close, but I don't think you can... I don't know, that you can't use the career politician thing, because she'd probably be a career politician anyway. Like, she's on the path to being a career politician, so...
Right. Lasting health impacts. Climate justice is extremely important. And in the Senate, I would fight to make sure we pass the Green New Deal, which includes a just transition for our workers from a fossil fuel economy to a green economy, and pass all of our...
Do they know that the Green New Deal is literally like five pages? Like, they keep talking about the Green New Deal. Like, there's no substance to the Green New Deal. There's nothing to the Green New Deal. It's a new buzzword. Like, fair share, living wage, it's all crap. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. There's nothing to the Green New Deal. It sounds nice to people, like, oh, we got to pass a Green New Deal. There was literally no specifics in the Green New Deal about what we actually had to do, but they all get on board in this debate. They're like, we have to pass a Green New Deal. Okay.
Someone just gives them like talking points, I think. Like, here's your notes, make sure that you emphasize these.
Like, could any of them name what's a specific thing in the Green New Deal that you'd love to implement? You can't answer because there is nothing. There's nothing specific in the Green New Deal to even bring up. It's just, we should change everything to renewable energy. Done. Signed, AOC.
Our environmental justice laws, so that we can make sure our frontline communities and our vulnerable communities are compensated and are able to live free from toxic pollutants.
I'm curious. Nobody mentioned climate change. Nobody mentioned nuclear. California has one remaining nuclear power plant, Diablo Canyon at Avila Beach. It represents 10% of the power grid. It runs rain or shine. It's not weather dependent. It does not contribute to global warming. It takes up a fraction of the space of the massive wind and solar farms that you've advocated. The governor has got the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to extend its life another 5 years. PG&E wants it another 15. The president is in support of nuclear. Can't meet our climate goals without it. I'm just curious. A, do you support the extension of Diablo Canyon, and does nuclear have a role in fighting climate change? Congresswoman Porter, you have 30 seconds.
I think Diablo Canyon needs to be safely decommissioned. I see this issue in my own backyard with nuclear waste from a energy.
So, did you oppose the extension?
Yes, I would. As I just said, I would.
I would like all Californians to deal with brownouts every time it gets hot and we have to turn on the air conditioning. I would like all of you to be without power. Thank you. That's my point, Katie Porter.
Here's my whiteboard.
Diablo Canyon.
What's that? And here's my whiteboard.
Here's my whiteboard.
Here's Diablo. And I'm putting an X through the Diablo Canyon, showing that I do not like Diablo Canyon.
I think the timetable that has been established is effective. I do believe we have to be investing in new technology for energy. I'm a proud member of the Nuclear Fusion Caucus, which is a form of energy that doesn't produce any of the hazardous waste and have the risk of dangerous accidents like the current plants in Diablo Canyon.
Congressman Schiff, nuclear.
I support the governor's plan to decommission the plant, but I also think that nuclear energy has a role to play in our energy portfolio. Look, we're going to need to.
What? You can't have both. That answer was contradictory. You can't say I support the governor in decommissioning Diablo Canyon and then go, but I also think nuclear is pretty important to meeting our climate goals. But
so we should probably... think he wants to open new plants, like
Does he want to make a better one, or you can't? Those are two points that don't make any sense together. You can't support decommissioning the only nuclear power plant here in California and then also say, well, it's vital for us to meet our climate goals.
To move to renewable energy, we're going to need to move to...
No. We all know if it doesn't happen in America, it doesn't affect global warming. He probably supports getting oil from, somewhere else. He probably supports these nuclear plants opening up elsewhere, because we all know all the politicians always remind us, not in the United States, because that causes global warming. But anywhere else in the world, it's okay.
Right. You know, if we get oil from Ecuador shipped in on big boats that use fossil fuels to get them here, and we have no idea what the working conditions for the laborers are down there, as opposed to we could pump oil safely and efficiently here in California and use less fossil fuel to transport it, it doesn't count. Because if it's out of sight, out of mind pollution, it doesn't count. If it's China or India or something like that, it doesn't count. But as long as we're doing...
You know, calories don't count when you're out of the country.
That's true. Yeah, when you're on vacation, calories don't count. So,
to wind and solar, we're going to have new transmission to get energy from where it's developed to where it's utilized. But if we want to get ahead of the tipping point, and I really believe that we can get ahead of this tipping point, and we must. We need a Green New Deal. We need to move with a sense of urgency away from fossil fuels that are killing us and killing the planet, and to green energy sources.
But nuclear is part of it.
I think nuclear is part of it.
Nuclear is part of it. But I also want to shut down the only nuclear power plant in California.
To your earlier point, you know what would have been actually amazing is, like, this isn't a debate. Just come bring us your idea of a Green New Deal and read it off and then let everyone decide who has the best one.
Yeah, because there really is no plan. It's just buzzword.
Congresswoman Lee?
Well, I support the decommissioning of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant. I don't support nuclear power. I know that we have to have a just transition to a green economy, and that means the job.
Okay. Joe Patterson made this point on X, and he's spot on. You cannot say you want to work towards a carbon neutral society where there's no carbon emissions and not support nuclear. You just can't. Right. Those things do not coincide. Nuclear power is truly the only energy source that produces zero carbon waste.
Yes.
And that's not me saying it. For any Democrats out there listening, that was Barack Obama's former energy secretary. He said that himself. It's the only source of fuel that doesn't produce carbon. So if you can't be taken seriously if you're saying, I want to get to a zero carbon fuel grid source, but then also go, but I also want to get rid of all nuclear, then you're not serious. You're not serious. You're taking the best fuel source off the table. Then you're not that committed to it and you're not that serious. And you have to ask, why are you taking it off the table? And why do you want this other stuff that's not as efficient?
The jobs that could be lost as a result of transitioning into a Green New Deal would have to be made certain that the workers had the job training.
Barbara Lee sounds like she had no idea what she was going to prepare for this debate at all. Or is that just me?
She mostly just uses identity politics. And so when it has nothing to do with identity politics, she's kind of like, woo, swinging it.
She heard the other two say Green New Deal, and she was like, I think I'm going to talk about Green New Deal. That's a good point.
I'm surprised she didn't say we need a Green New Deal for environmental justice, because I was born in this part of Texas and I know poverty.
Oh, yeah. She brought that up, wasn't she? She was like, I was born in Texas, so I know Latinos.
Well, she brings up it all the time. It's her main talking point. The first debate, I don't think you watched, I don't recall. She's very much like, I'm the only one here who understands what it's like to go through X, Y, and Z. And yes, if she did go through all those things, then she does understand and it does make her relatable to those who are struggling. But she kind of never misses a chance to bring it up.
Right. All right. Skipping ahead because we're
way over an hour right now.
But let's see. I was going to talk about the crime in Oakland. We all know the crime in Oakland. what's going on there? But there was something. It was an interesting story. I just looked this up today, and I didn't even know this. That they are starting a recall against the mayor of Oakland. And there was a press conference of the guy leading the effort, and he got assaulted at the press conference.
Do you think that was?
I'm not making this up. This literally just happened like 24 hours ago. So the guy who was starting the recall because crime has gotten so bad in Oakland got assaulted while giving his press conference in Oakland. So
that's terrible.
So we'll keep an eye on what's going on with the recall there. But let's skip ahead to the closing statements, and then we'll give our closing remarks. So,
and I just want to say my whiteboard is literally right there. It's here. It's like 20
it's here.
Away from me on the other side of my front door.
Well, now you can use it for another podcast episode. You can show your whiteboard.
We'll people see. Of California. And I'll be relentless in the pursuit of that.
Mr. Garvey, we'll start with you. This is time for a wrap-up.
I didn't before. Get to respond to the question
Ms.
at all.
Ms. Porter, your Sorry. Time.
Thank you. I would say that what I have learned about myself is that institutional Washington, which serves itself, doesn't want
to... Cabrera, that we need to shake it up.
Change very much. And that we have seen this with big dark money, even here in California, the greatest democracy in the United States, flooding the airways with lies.
Thank you, Ms. Porter.
So closing statements, you have 45 seconds. This is the last debate before the primary election. Mr. Garvey, go ahead.
Well, to the Latino community, thank you for the currency of friendship all the years. To all the people of California, this has been a journey. But if you feel the quality of your life is the same now that it was.
And time.
It's been a journey. Are we watching The Bachelor?
It's been a journey. And that's time.
3 years ago. If you believe there this crime in the streets that is relentless, if you believe that the crisis at the border is real, if you believe that inflation is stifling your family, then I want you to vote for me. I want you to go to stevegarvey.com. And you know in your heart. And tonight was a night where I'm putting my heart and soul into your mind and body. Because I want to represent you for 6 years.
Excuse Thank me. You, Mr. Garvey. Congresswoman Lee.
Whoa.
So violated.
Phrasing, Mr. Garvey. I want to put my heart and soul into your mind and body. Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say this, but slow down there.
Wow. Wow. Buy us dinner first, Mr. Garvey. Jeez.
45 seconds.
Well, thank you for inviting us to be with you again. Thank you to the voters who have watched this debate. I think it's important to know that I know what it takes to make life better for everyone in California. I have faced so many obstacles, such as being on public assistance, such as being on food stamps, not being able to afford childcare, having to take my children to class with me. I know the 20 million people who are living one paycheck away from poverty. I know, I see you, I want to work for you in the United States Senate to make life better for you. I know what it takes to fix our democracy and to protect our democracy. I know what it takes to protect our reproductive freedom. And I'm so proud that Reproductive Freedom for All has endorsed me in this campaign because our democratic rights are being taken away. Thank you again. Please vote for Barbara Lee at CA.com.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Congressman Schiff, final statement.
Senator Feinstein was a giant in the state because she had the ability to take on the big fights, but she also had the ability to get things done. She took on the NRA and we got an assault weapons ban. She worked with people throughout the state of California to deliver for Californians everywhere. This is what I'm going to bring to the Senate. Senator Feinstein was a good example of the fact that you've got talkers and you've got doers. She was a doer. She got things done. For the Imperial Valley, I want to make sure the mineral wealth of the Imperial Valley helps people in the Imperial Valley. For people in the Central Valley, I want to make sure they have water they can drink. I want to make sure farm workers can have a path to citizenship. I want to make sure those in the north of the state are protected from wildfire and have access to rural health care and broadband. I want to be a senator for all Californians, and that's what I will be.
Thank you, Congressman. Congresswoman Porter, your final comments.
Californians, you don't have to choose between having a career politician who's golden to special.
It's her one line. It's her whole shtick, and she flubbed the landing.
We really need to do more drinking games on here.
We would have been wasted if we had said, take a drink every time she says career politician or Green New Deal or fair share or anything like that. We would have been
on the floor. I feel like some of these podcasts we should get wasted.
Well, this one, yeah, we could have used.
I'm sorry.
This is the second time I'm watching this Senate debate, and it did not get better the second time around. I think it got worse. So,
special interests and having someone who simply doesn't have a lot of ideas or experience at all. I can give you an example of how I've delivered results without ever being beholden. During the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, when we were scared and we had no resources, just at home watching a graph of rising cases, I went toe-to-toe with Trump's top public health official, and I got him to promise free COVID testing for every single American, regardless of immigration status, regardless of health insurance. That saved lives. You can have results without having a career politician who does Washington's corporate agenda's bidding.
Thank you very much, Congress.
Okay. Woo. Well, that's whoo.
I just want to remind everyone that Katie Porter still lives in the Irvine, what's it called? UC Irvine housing that is in like a multi-million dollar neighborhood, even though she hasn't worked for them in years. They're still paying her property taxes. I looked it up. And yeah, she's living her little cush life in that house, despite the fact that when you're no longer employed by UCI, you're supposed to move out. I guess they technically kept her on as an employee so that she could live in that housing. But it's annoying when she likes to act like she advocates for everybody. Meanwhile, she's got this whole special housing set up.
Yeah, she likes to position herself as not the career politician, but she seems to like to enjoy the benefits of being a well-connected politician and well-supported. All right. So final thoughts. We're over by a little bit that we usually do, but I feel like we always start these things and I'm like, when I go through my show notes, I'm like, oh, I think this is enough for the show. And then we end up like getting halfway through it. I'm like, it's already like 6:45 and I haven't even touched the second subject on our
I talk show. Too much. Okay. I actually wrote down final thoughts because you always ask me and I'm like, eh. So, okay. Garvey, I'm sorry. He's embarrassing to the GOP. Barbara Lee will never think outside of identity politics, and so that will be any bill that she ever tries to author or support if it doesn't have identity politics. Look, I got my pen. Porter, so I think that Katie actually does care. She's annoying, and I think that mostly she tries to stick by like what she says she believes in, but no. She's just going to win. Obviously, Garvey's not going to win. Schiff's pulling ahead. I think this is weird, but I think that we still seem to primarily vote for men over women. And so I think that's why he's leading against Lee and Porter. No, I mean, that's not the only reason, but I think that is a big reason. And so then, of course, Republicans are voting for Garvey. Mm-hmm. And he's going to like get 0.2%. Schiff will take the rest.
That's a point I hadn't thought about yet, is that we're going to likely go from two female California senators to two male senators. So I guess in the progressive state of California, we're moving backwards.
I have a question for you, though. I should have asked this at the beginning so you could think about it, because I don't have an answer.
Right.
Neither of us is impressed by anything that any of these candidates have said or done. And we're bored to tears by them, in fact. Is there anybody that you can think of, whether they're a current politician or have been a candidate, that you would have liked to have seen run for this position?
Oof. For Senate? Oh, gosh. The problem with Senate is it's got to have like that big name recognition. And right, you know, because it's a national scale federal position.
Right.
I mean, Senate is like one step below president. So I Steve Garvey makes it because he was a former Dodger great. All these other politicians have been around forever. I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't have an answer. Like, I thought of this morning and I've been trying to think of it all day.
It would have had to be someone who's not in the political world who could have stepped in and been like, I want to run for Senate for California, who was charismatic and had big name recognition. I don't think it would come from within like the Republican Party.
I agree.
It's no offense to any of the Republicans here in California who are doing their job, but we love all of them that are working hard to do right by California. Not the ones who are trying to grift off Californians. We talked about that plenty of times. But yeah, I can't think of anybody who would be. So no, I can't think of anybody. Which is one reason why I didn't really, you know, I had put off kind of talking about this Senate race. But after watching this debate, I think the bigger lesson to take away from this is like a lot of our politicians are just not impressive people. Like at the end of the day, like they're just not like head and shoulders better than everybody else. Like they're just, you would think like we, for something like the Senate, you'd think you'd look at a lot of these candidates and go, wow, like they've done so much stuff. They're well accomplished. They're like the smartest people I've ever heard. Like they're like all these things. Like you watch that debate and go, this is the best we have to offer to run our country. Like to me, that's just like, that's just, I don't know. That's just depressing that we need to demand better out of our politicians. But yeah, I do think it will be, in the end, it'll be Garvey versus Schiff. Schiff will obviously then cruise to become the senator and he'll be there until the day he dies, unless he gets like a cabinet position or something like that. Same thing with Alex Padilla. Once you're a senator, like why would you ever not be a senator? Probably the greatest gig in the world. But yeah, completely unimpressive candidates at the end of the day. They're just, none of them wowed you with anything. None of them made you feel like if I had to vote for somebody. Oddly enough, like I was submitting our ballot, or I was submitting our primary ballot, and I was going over my ballot. And honestly, there were a lot of choices I just left blank. Like I just looked at the choices and I was like, there's just nobody. Like I voted for a couple things. But like at the end, I don't think I've ever submitted a ballot that had so many empty submissions. So, that's the moral of the story of tonight, is that if you ever feel bad about yourself, just think you could be senator, because if you look at this group of people, I bet you're way smarter and more talented than this group of people. So that's my final closing message. Any other final thoughts?
No.
No? Okay. All right. So we went a little, wow, we went way over tonight. But yeah, if you're at the Libertarian Convention this weekend, make sure to stop by on Saturday and say hi to us. Or if you see us walking around, yeah, we're very friendly.
Phil's nicer than I am.
I'm not scary. We're very friendly. We love to talk to people. So hopefully we'll see a bunch of you out there for the Libertarian Convention. And then we'll see you next week. And we'll see you on the next one. Oh, forgot to end the show. Same way I always end the show. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, all that stuff. And the best way you can support this show is share it with a friend or family member. It's the best and free way to support this show. So with that, we will see you on the next one. Later, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.